Hey, this is Andrew Von Ritchie from Pretty Awesome Gamers Charity, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Good morning, and welcome to another exciting episode of A Radio Geekly. Thanks, Andrew, for that intro. My name is just Jess, and happy 2017 to everyone out there. Hope you all were able to end 2016 with a bang in whatever way, shape, or form that might have been. I had myself had my fun little gaming group come over for an annual New Year's Eve all-day gaming marathon. I'm a tabletop board gamer, so I enjoy doing that. I'm joined in the studio by our fellow collective member, David. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Jess.
How are you? How did your 2016 wrap up? Was it good? Was it bad? Was it everything in between?
2016 was a great year for me.
Awesome.
A lot of changes. As for the actual New Year's night, my wife and I spent the evening watching Rick and Morty.
Awesome.
And had some 7-Up for New Year's and then went to sleep.
There you go. Did you make it all the way to midnight or did you call it in early?
We made it.
Okay.
It's gotten to that point where you know how it is where I'm not that old, but it just something happened.
Yeah, totally. I always laugh at the people that are determined to go to, you know, Times Square to watch the ball drop and everything, but it's like I could watch it on my TV, you know, hours before.
I did that once.
Yeah.
And it was
actually going to New York.
Yeah, in 2000,
my
friends and I drove out to New York. And
was it worth it? Did you feel the vibe of the new year ringing in?
It was cold. It was fun. It was interesting.
Yeah.
It's cold, long, just sat around all day and then it happened and we're like, okay.
Awesome.
It was exciting. It was different.
Okay. Well, is it one of those like bucket list items? Like,
I think it was, you know, 2000, it was like a moment thing. We need to do something spectacular.
Okay.
And now, you know, it's just a number, but I can say I've done that.
Yeah.
Along with hundreds of thousands of other people.
Right. Oh man. The whole Y2K scare was in effect, right? During that time.
And that was the... That led to a lot of great plot lines for some of my shows, so
okay.
I did like that.
Yeah, that was awesome. But here we are 17 years later.
Okay. We're old.
And we're old, but we're still having fun. And we're going to keep having fun here in 2017 and continue on with our discussion on gatekeeping. It's a serious topic, but we felt that it was important to inform our listeners and fellow geeks alike that it is still rampant here, and how we can approach it, how we can better ourselves in educating and learning about the different communities that are oppressed by gatekeeping. To rehash what we talked about last month, gatekeeping we defined as the activity of controlling or limiting the general access to something. And we talked about the oppression of gatekeeping on women in geek culture. And the term a fake geek girl was also brought to mind. A girl, according to the Wikipedia site, it said it's a woman accused of finding interest in geeky topics like video games, comic books, just to get attention from men, which as a female, I found that also offensive because there are several women in the geek industry doing geeky things that are actually productive to society and doing major impacts on geek culture in a positive way. So there's the Geek Girl Con, which we had one of our collective members, Rob, come in to actually he was able to attend and was able to speak with Anita Sarkeesian and get her perspective on geek culture and the feminist movement within geek culture and how it has impacted society in a positive way. And so that was really enlightening, I thought, to hear that there are several women out there that are making a positive change for geeks alike. And it's not, geeks aren't just defined by male-dominated society, although we have seen it within, you know, the last several decades. But I think, David, we are turning a point here in this new year that there are people that are going to be impacting the geek culture that don't identify as male, that don't identify as white, and they're still doing things in a positive way. And so today we are going to talk about the gatekeeping impact on the LGBT community. And I know I have fellow allies that are within that community that have spoken about their oppression in geek culture, and we'll hear from some of them later on in the show. But I'm just encouraged to see that they still have a positive outlook on geek things and what that means to our culture. And I think especially in Portland, there is an embracing of this community that you can still be a geek and identify yourself as trans or queer, and be able to be positive in culture and making new content. Like there's several graphic artists and comic book designers and people making films and writing novels that are really, really good. And coming from personal experience, they're able to dive into these characters and kind of elaborate on those things. So I feel that it's definitely, we're moving into a positive direction from, let's say, you know, 50 years ago, where a lot of geek things were more male dominated. There was definitely a patriarchy going on there. But I think it's there's a turning point happening, and that gets me really, really excited.
Well, I guess along that same line with your turning point, it makes me think of we were doing an interview with an author here a few months ago, John Corey Whaley, and he's an openly gay writer, but you wouldn't know it. But his characters, and I guess I say that in a way, like we were talking to him about when does a character at this point in a book, or you know, whereas you know something that was written the same book 10, 15 years ago, the fact that the character is gay in the book would be the story, whereas now the fact that the character is gay is just the fact, you know, the character just happens to be gay, mm-hmm. something like that. And I think I would like to see that more in just this whole line of geek culture, where the fact that someone is of color or gay is just, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You know, what matters is the product that they're producing and the fact that we're all in the same enjoying, you know, I kind of like that aspect
this
of things.
This is like,
right. Yeah. And I agree with you, David, like it shouldn't be such a surprise when you introduce a character as them being gay or a person of color. It should just kind of help define what the characters are doing. So I think it is a good thing to actually come forth and present these different communities that are in geek culture to say that, yeah, they're just people. You know, they're people making content, they're people enjoying content, they're people contributing to this amazing world that we have of geekdom, that it's just super exciting just to see how many people are so creative and have such good ideas that they're actually bringing it out into the world, you know, in whatever platform it may be, comics or films or books or even just discussions like open panels. I like going to conventions and seeing panels of people from all different walks of life, and they're all talking about the new Star Wars film, or they're talking about the change from different role-playing games and how that's impacted their lives and things. And it's super exciting to see that. So we're going to be discussing more in those realms with the LGBT community and their impact in the positive way for geek culture. But if you have any thoughts or ideas that you would like to contribute during this show, feel free to give us a call, 503-231-8187, and we would love to talk to you. You can also send us an email if you are so inclined and not near a phone. You can email us at aradiogeekly@kboo.fm. Again, aradiogeekly@kboo.fm. And so now we're going to take a moment and talk about a local perspective from one of our collective members, Rob. He actually went out into the field. He's like, we like to call him our field reporter here. He was able to interview Merrick Monroe, who is the manager from Bridge City Comics. We're going to go to her interview in just a moment, but I think we might have a caller on the line. Hello, welcome to A Radio Geekly.
Hi, how's it going?
Hey, this is Jack. How's it going, Jack?
Going good.
Awesome. Thanks for calling in. And I know that, Jack, you have some insight into geek culture and from your perspective. So why don't you take a couple minutes and kind of share some things that you've experienced while being a geek?
Sure. So I cover many different spectrums of that. In my geekdom, or in my community, we call it indigenerdity, for Native Americans who are into geek culture as well. So being a POC, person of color in geek culture, also being a queer person of color in geek culture, has been very interesting, to say the least. It's tricky because in the way the culture is, you know, it's very heteronormative, and it can be very tough sometimes. I've just gotten a lot of pushback when it comes to trying to bend the rules of certain things with certain beloved characters. Doing cosplay and trying to add your own twist to it, your own flair, is usually encouraged. However, you know, I've seen pushback from people trying to... I'm trying to figure out the right words for this. But basically, you know, trying to put their own twist on it, making you know, Mario and Luigi a gay couple when they're actually a gay couple in real life. The cosplayers are, I mean. And also just in gaming culture as well is very homophobic and sexist. And so anytime there is any sort of, hints in video games about certain queer characters or things like that, they're always flamboyant. There's a lot of stereotypes still in the culture and community. So they expect you to be flamboyant if you're male. They expect you to be super butch if you're female. And if you're non-binary, well, then you just don't really exist, which is really kind of hard to find out, like, where you fit. But at the same time, I think part of what's really cool about our communities, both people of color and in the queer community, is that we're able to kind of start blazing our own trail. Then it's, if you don't have something, then I'm just going to create, you know, I'm going to be what I want to be and what I want to see in the world. So we have things now like Gamer X, which is GAYMER for LGBTQ gamers, and we have stuff like what I'm doing at the Indigenous Comic Con, and all kinds of stuff like Black Nerd Girls is awesome podcast. I mean, we're really trying to make our own space. But that doesn't come, you know, without some people pushing back and being like, why do you need to be so separatist? Why do you need to have your own thing like this? And in reality, it's because you wouldn't let us be who we are, trying to confine us to these very heteronormative, very white ways of being. And in reality, we are not those things. So it's been tricky, to say the least, but it's also been very rewarding to get to meet people who are so creative and so fascinating, and are able to kind of find ways to work through this stuff that we fight all day.
Wow. Yeah. And Jack, do you see yourself following, was there any sort of a pioneer person that you kind of aspire to want to, like, either collaborate with or get inspiration from to have your own voice, but like, I wanted to do this because this person did something?
I think personally for me, it started with before me and Johnny J started A Tribe Called Geek, which then evolved into doing Indigenous Comic-Con this year and things like that. There's a podcast by two Canadian women called Métis in Space. They are Métis tribal women from Canada. And it's two women who watch sci-fi shows that have Indigenous episodes. So, you know, there's a Star Trek episode where it's an entire planet of Native Americans and they have to relocate them and things like that. So the Skinwalker episode from X-Files. So they watch these episodes and critique them very bluntly and address a lot of the stereotypes that we're seeing on these screens that still don't go away. I mean, even now people think it's a little bit better, but, you know, Red Wolf isn't super fantastic of representation either. So they tear down these walls of, you know, misrepresentation, and also just two women being able to do that was really awesome. So they get a lot of audience questions of like, you know, what do I do if I want to do something like this? And their motto for the podcast has always been do the thing. If you want to do something, if you want to create something, but you're not sure if you should do it, do the thing. Because once you do the thing, then other people will be inspired by what you do, and they'll do the thing, and more of this stuff will come up, because we're all so scattered right now, and people are doing their own comics, their own podcasts, and we just don't even know about each other. But if you do the thing, then you exist in this community, and then people are able to find you, and then we're able to find community with all those people. So I did the thing, and now we're doing a bigger thing, and now we're planning to do an even bigger thing that I can't talk about yet, but doing the thing is very important. And so after listening to that podcast, it was very inspiring. And I've had those lovely women on my show on Rose City Native Radio and on A Tribe Called Geek, and they're fantastic. And I just really admire that, you know, they were the first of their kind to really do this at all. I mean, just even they're the first Natives, as far as I'm aware, to do a podcast like that, to do a Native geek podcast also by two women. It's usually men in this area. So it's really, really cool to see that. And now Johnny J and I have kind of joined them in that, in that particular area, right, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Just so basically take the initiative and start it off, and somewhere down the line, there's going to be people that were thinking it, but not actually doing something about it, and then having you do something about it has given them that platform to join on. So that's really awesome to hear.
Hey, Jack, you said, I like what you're saying about the do the thing, and you did mention earlier about something, I guess I want to know if you've had any pushback from people people who are thinking that you should be representing them, or you are basically, since we're on the subject of gatekeeping here, you are, by just doing something, become your own gatekeeper. And are they saying you're doing it wrong, but you don't have that perspective from your point of view, your life, of just being who you are? Mm-hmm. How do you keep that balance, and how do you get to the point where, well, like you said, do the thing, but if you can't win, don't try type mentality of like, I can never do it perfectly for everyone. Mm-hmm. I think that shuts, I mean, that personally, I've dealt with that myself, and I don't know how you, it's something you have to come to terms with when you say do the thing, but then there's always going to be someone who's not happy.
Yeah, but with that someone who's not happy, then it's, well, if I'm not doing it the right way, then why don't you do it and show me how the right way is? If you think you can do better, then do it. I'm 100% behind you if you can. But if not, that's fine. There's plenty of other places that you can go, really. We haven't really gotten that much pushback of you're doing it wrong yet. It's a little bit, some disagree with just our critique of stereotypes and our and how we are portrayed, and being like, oh, well, this is actually a positive representation or this or that, when, you know, obviously we disagree. Both Johnny and I have been a part of the Not Your Mascot campaign and things like that. So this is something that we're very, very familiar with. But at the same time, again, I would encourage them, like, you know, if they think that we're doing this wrong, then create your own thing and try, and if you think you can do better, then please show me. And it's not saying that I'm doing the best I can. Well, I'm doing the best I can at this, and I'm not saying that my way or the highway, but it's okay. So what I'm doing doesn't work for you. So then create something that works for people like you who might not like our stuff, you know, and just kind of water off a duck's back. Obviously, like you said, you can't please everybody, and stressing out over trying to please everybody isn't going to be healthy for you and isn't going to fix anything. So just being able to kind of recognize that and accept that and be like, okay, I'm sorry this isn't for you, but if you want to try to do something that, you know, that you think we missed or whatever, like, feel free. If you want to come on and talk about it on our show, feel free. Like, there are plenty of options for you. No one's forcing you to listen to our podcast.
Well said.
Yeah, well said. So, Jack, do you have links that our listeners can go to for your podcast and, you know, maybe for Gamer Geek, Gamer X, and Indigenous Comic Con and things like that?
Yeah, so you can go to atribecalledgeek.com. Johnny J writes a ton of articles on all kinds of geek culture things. You can find our archived episodes. We're working on getting some new episodes out, but we're in the process of working on something right now. You can also go on Facebook and find us there. We're also on Twitter at A Tribe Called Geek. You can also find information on Indigenous Comic Con at indigenouscomiccon.com. You can also find it on Facebook at Indigenous Comic Con. And then GamerX is GayMerX. And they're on Facebook, and if you Google them, I'm sure you'll find their website. They're in their third or fourth year now of doing that, and then Indigenous Comic-Con just had our first ever year, and we broke our ideal goals for attendees, and it's going to be even bigger next year, so we're super excited. I would also say recommend following Indigenous Narrative Collective. It's incomics.com. They are the people who partnered with us to do Indigenous Comic-Con, and they do fantastic work in making Native comics such as Super Indian and Tales of the Mighty Code Talkers.
Wonderful. And we'll post those links onto the Radio Geekly Facebook page as well. So thanks, Jack, for your insight on there, and happy 2017.
Yeah, happy 2017. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, take care.
Thanks.
All right, that was awesome and informative. And
I know I didn't mean to go into the weeds right there, but I like what she's saying. Do the thing.
Right.
And I think a big part of it is you're not doing it with malice. You're doing it with what you know, what you believe, and you're not trying to hurt anyone. You're trying to bring them in. There are some sensitivity issues with everything, and mm-hmm. you're not doing, but like, you know, if you're not doing it with malice, and if you are unaware of things, be able to adjust and learn and know what you're doing. Like, hey, that's insensitive to this. And like, oh, right. And fix it.
Yeah.
Just understand things and not go, well, I'm not going to listen to you. Mm-hmm. But like she said, do the thing. And what I love also is like, there's so many opportunities. We're in an era with, I guess we've been in one for a while, but it just seems like things have taken off. I feel, I was thinking about this earlier, you know, when you talk about the boom of the internet, I had the excuse of like, well, I'm poor, still am, but I was, you know, like, this is happening, but, you know, I'm not in it, you know, I'm not creating the eBay, I'm not creating Amazon, I'm not,
right,
but we're in it right now again with the whole this YouTube podcast, all this stuff that anyone can step in and do it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be perfect, but it just, you know, like anything, you take time and you get better at it, and people will rise up, you know, to the top, and you see like, this is good quality stuff. There's a lot of great things for everyone.
Right.
And you are not, like, anyone can step in and do that themselves and learn and get better. And I guess, so if you want to do it, you have your opportunity. The only thing it's holding back is probably just
self-motivation.
Yeah, that's always my problem.
But yeah, I think it's great for all of us because we have so many outlets now to actually do the thing. You know, we have the internet, we have social media. I mean, we still have pen and paper, you know, and our computer screens and all that kind of stuff. But I think there's always just such a, maybe just an initial fear of, I'm not sure how this is going to come across. But in my experience, and then what Jack was mentioning, doing the thing, most of the time, you actually have people that are on your side than against you. And she, you know, she was mentioning she rarely had any pushback so far about what they're doing. And so that's also an encouraging, like, positive thing to think about and go, wow, I'm actually doing the thing and people like what I'm doing, you know? And so I think that's really cool that there are people out there that want to share their experiences and do it in a way that feels comfortable to them. And most likely they will only have positive, you know, response rather than negative response. So it's I don't know. It's just a really, really cool thing. So thanks to Jack for calling in. I also want to come in and mention the Merrick Monroe, who is the manager from Bridge City Comics. She was interviewed by Rob, one of our collective members, and he's was chatting with her about the impact of gatekeeping within comic culture. Comic books are something that have grown vastly too, and are one of those platforms where people from the LGBT community can be voiced, can be put into a character. And like you said, David, like nowadays, having a character be gay is not such a surprising thing anymore. And so she kind of dives into that and sees her impact in how the positivity in Portland has embraced these communities. So we'll take a listen to that now.
This is Radio Geekly. I'm Robert Lagos, sitting with Merrick Monroe, who just happens to be the manager of Bridge City Comics here in Portland, Oregon.
Yes.
It's a rather fantastic comics shop. If you haven't been there yet, I highly encourage you to visit. I'm going to use that as an intro to this.
And that is Manju, yes.
Why don't you just walk us through how you got into being a geek? Mm-hmm. You know, what does being geek mean to you?
Or, oh, man.
Or does it even exist anymore?
Is it sure. And that's a hard one. Then you get into that argument of geek versus nerd and which is weirder, and I don't know. I started getting into geek culture type stuff when I was pretty young. I read a lot, so I pretty much grew up in libraries, which obviously I was labeled right off the bat as a book nerd. I got into weird cartoon shows, like Batman the Animated Series was one of my favorites growing up. Eventually, video games, so PlayStation games or computer gaming. My personal nerd interests kind of ran that particular gamut of books, cartoons, and computers. So from there, I think I've been reading comics for just over 10 years now. Started around the time that I moved to Portland in 2006. And I think I started with books like Why the Last Man and The Walking Dead, Neil Gaiman's Sandman comic. And it's a slippery slope from there. So, yeah, and now I manage a comic book shop and never would have thought that would happen.
How is the comic culture changing? Maybe not even isolated to Portland, because we know now that Portland is really taking off and sort of getting into to be a mature comics city.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned that Walker?
David Walker.
David
yes.
Walker. You mentioned that he did a flash mob, Black Heroes Matter. Maybe you could tell me a few more of your insights into sort of how the traditional comics have been changing.
Mm-hmm.
What is the sea change that we're seeing? Because I think it's going in the right direction.
Definitely. That's a really interesting question. I think with any form of entertainment, one of the biggest factors in progressive change, specifically in progressive change, is the fact that social media is a thing. Everyone is on social media. Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, whatever your platform of choice is, 9 times out of 10, you're going to have a creator that you love who's also active, and you can engage with them through that platform that you both understand, and you both understand the language and how to have a conversation in that realm. So you've got a creator that you follow on Twitter who starts posting, hey, wouldn't it be cool if I did a story about this? And you can chime in and say, that actually is really relative to my life, or I would love to see that, but maybe with this sort of a thing. And you can start engaging with these creators and giving them direct feedback. Of course, that's not always ideal for a creator. Sometimes creators get really overwhelmed by the amount of people saying, I don't like the way you did it. You did it wrong. Do it this way because that's what I like. And that's not ideal, obviously.
Right.
That's not great for anyone to hear, but...
Designed by committee.
Right.
Never a good thing.
Right. But still, it allows everyone to have a degree of awareness of what the other side is thinking and plotting and enjoying. So I think just being able to have that very personal seeing creators as a normal person gives us as fans a greater opportunity to appreciate the material that they've created. And vice versa, it gives those creators better insight into who their fans are and what sort of content their fans want to be seeing.
So, wow, that was very impactful for me hearing that, because it seems like we've, so by that description, we've gone from a place where where the artist is sort of on high and creates the art, and that without as much consideration as we're now seeing for the consumer of the art.
Right, that so, vacuum doesn't exist anymore.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
And do you think this has had a positive sort of growth effect? Because I could see this going horribly wrong, potentially. But, I mean, I from what I've been seeing in comics, it has been going well.
It can go wrong. For example, the new Captain America series, where at the end of the first issue, Steve Rogers said, "Hail Hydra."
Oh, okay. I saw a bunch of uproar about that.
Right, and everyone went onto Twitter and just lambasted Nick Spencer, the series writer, for how can you make Captain America a Nazi? That's not Captain America. What are you doing? You're the worst thing that's ever happened to this comic. And for the record, Nick Spencer, white man. And he's getting this sort of a response to people. He's getting this response from fans, from people that are reading the comic. It's like, well, this is issue one, guys. Give it a minute. Maybe wait to issue three to see what happens.
He hasn't come out as alt-right Captain America.
It worked out for as best as we could hope on that one. But, I mean, Nick Spencer's a white dude, very politically aligned and very vocal about that. But he still suffered an amount of harassment because of his creative choices, whereas we have so many female creators and creators of color who receive even worse feedback from people. Devastating.
I did chat with Anita Sarkeesian, mm-hmm. And so I'm vaguely familiar with the level of malice that can manifest toward our female creators and advocates.
But at the same time, it also, like, having those voices publicly available talking about, hey, I'm getting harassment for this, it allows all the other people to go, that's really dumb, I think this was beautiful, or I'm sorry they're saying that, your comic changed my life, your book gave me this greater insight, your TV episode that you wrote allowed me a sense of comfort for who I am. So there's still an amazing potential for creators to be rewarded for their social media efforts, as long as we can remember that they don't necessarily work for us directly. They aren't at our beck and call of what to create.
But maybe we could rephrase it as they work with the goal of representing us.
True, yes. Definitely.
But that's not to say they work for us.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, we can't. If comics fans just went to their creators and said, make the comic that I like, where does that leave the other three people in the room?
Let's pivot a little bit. Can you give me a rundown on what the prototype typical comic hero was, say, 10, 20 years ago, and how that typification has changed?
Sure. So we've definitely seen a lot of change in the face behind the masks, if you will. There are definitely a lot more female characters being well represented today. Characters of color, queer characters coming to light, trans characters. It's not perfect, but we're starting to see a lot of that representation that smaller portions of our geek community have been needing to see in comics. Used to be just lots of rippling dudes with muscles and grimaces and perfect hair, probably, and a beautiful cape fluttering behind them. Mm-hmm. And we're definitely moving into more... I really like seeing a lot of young female characters in comics. Miss Marvel and Squirrel Girl and...
I have a friend who dresses her daughter up as Squirrel Girl. It is the cutest thing I have seen. So I've been very curious about this new X-Man or X-Woman,
mm-hmm.
who is Squirrel Girl.
It's a fun one, and she's full of puns and just honest and hope. She's pretty rad. Definitely good reading for people that enjoy a more lighthearted comic. Not everyone does, that's fine, but right. if you've been waiting to see something in comics that isn't just guns and superpowers, like, we're getting there. We're definitely getting into that realm with comics.
And I can't help but wonder, is this just an extension of a metaphor to open up all these other potential topics? I mean, when Stan Lee was first putting stuff together, I mean, a lot of it was in reference to the civil rights movement.
Yes.
And different approaches that one could take to gain political power and ultimately a version of liberation based on that acquired political power. Now we can take the same sort of context and same fictional story, and now instead of, say, it being about civil rights based on race, we can still maintain this metaphor, just working it into, say, civil rights based on gender identity or mm-hmm. sexual orientation or what have you. And I feel the comics are almost getting richer because we're starting to see their potential to apply to all these rather intense topics.
Yes. But at the same time, since these topics are becoming normalized both as valid and healthy lifestyles to be living, if that is what you align with, but also in things to discuss, things to read about, so we don't always have to cover it or create subterfuge to discuss these topics. We can straight up talk about these things in comics, hopefully in other entertainment mediums as well, but in comics it's been great to be able to just say, this character's gay, this character is trans, obviously this character is a Black woman and they are having this experience in comics land, and it mirrors what a Black woman will experience on the street. It's not all shrouded in right. mystery anymore. We can talk about it.
It's not 1950s.
Right.
The comic. It is.
It's great. It's great to have that level of transition. To kind of throw back to what we were saying about social media, I think a lot of that does come from the fact that social media allows us all to have a voice that is present if people are interested in listening to it. So it allows creators to listen to the voice of random whoever people on the street, tweeting on their phone sort of a thing, and pull those sort of ideologies and experiences into comics to make their comics both more realistic and more relatable for fans. One of the barriers with reading comics for a long time is that people, even now, people even this day think that comic books are a Superman, that they are the perfect specimen who can fly and is indestructible, and maybe he has a foe sometimes, but you know that in the end Superman is going to win. And that's not always an engaging story for people if they think that that's what all comic books are like.
Right.
So knowing that Ta-Nehisi Coates has been writing Black Panther and bringing his own experience in writing Black fiction and his Black experience into the comics format, that has brought a lot of people into comics just to read what he has to say in this medium.
So to address the topic of gatekeeping head on,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we've sort of been addressing many of the very viable points in terms of how the communication chain is essentially established beyond where it was ever theorized to potentially go one day.
Right, yeah.
So with regard to gatekeeping, I see this as, is there gatekeeping still? I mean, with the internet, with tweeting, with being able to reach out and touch your authors, essentially right. de-deify them.
yeah. Everybody's just a person. Somewhere out there, everybody's just a person. So gatekeeping definitely still exists. It is difficult for me to speak to it personally because I live in Portland, Oregon.
Right.
And I try to be very aware of the fact that my experience, both as a comics fan and as a comics retailer, as a woman working in a comic book shop, are going to be different in Portland than, for example, a woman like me, if I moved to North Carolina and was working in a comic book shop there, I would probably have a different experience. I would probably have a different experience working in Texas, working in Minnesota, like any other state. Portland is extremely unique, and I am incredibly thankful that this is where my comics path has taken me, is to working in Portland in the comics industry. So personally, it's hard to say what other people are experiencing on a retail ground level. I have a lot of friends who are comics creators, and seeing the sort of treatment they receive when they have made certain very bold choices in their creative directions with the books that they are writing or drawing or directing, sort of a thing. Definitely still have, you know, a lot of times dudes coming in and saying, "You're the worst thing that's ever happened to this comic," or why did anyone allow you to write this? You're going to be the downfall of this publisher. Like, incredibly unnecessary things that I don't think all creators are experiencing, but female creators definitely come up against quite often.
Disproportionately to their male counterparts.
I imagine so. And that's kind of why I have a hard time talking about personal experiences with gatekeeping, is because I can look around my shop, you know, 3 p.m. on a Saturday, and there will be 10 customers in the store, and one of them is male, and that's it. Like, that's a pretty good ratio.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so it's been awesome to be involved in this community locally. It's nice that we do have more and more women being involved in comics culture and comics creation. More women, more people of color, getting more variety in who's writing these stories and who's drawing them, who's buying them, which is great. And I don't really care how people got into comics, if they've never read a comic book before, or if they've only watched 3 seasons of The Walking Dead. Like, come to me and I will find you a comic book that you can fall in love with. That's all I want.
That's fantastic.
It's a good time to be a comics fan.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way, especially in Portland.
Yeah, we're pretty lucky here. I cop to that.
Well, cool. This has been a great interview. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for asking me on, Robert.
Sure thing. Again, this is a Radio Geekly. I'm Robert Lacoste with Merrick Monroe. You have a great day out there.
And thanks to Robert for that exciting interview. And I believe we have him on the phone. Hello, Robert. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. Glad to be here. Sorry I couldn't make it earlier. I was actually attending to something that relates back to KGU Radio. 'Tis the season, so in the spirit of giving, I thought I should donate my old car to KGU. So I actually just had the tow truck come, pull it away. Easy peasy, done in 15 minutes, and I can only recommend that everyone consider this. If you have an old, say, clunky car that you're thinking of replacing, go ahead and contact KBOO. They will help you get that done.
Wonderful. But, yeah, go to kboo.fm, and I believe somewhere on the front page there's a donate button to donate your vehicle. So that is awesome, and a great excuse for not being here in the studio with us. Yeah, so I know you were interviewing Merrick on there about gatekeeping. What was something that might have not have came out in the recording here that you found interesting when she was discussing gatekeeping within the comic book realm?
I mean, honestly, the thing that really stuck out to me was the disappearance of the veil between the content creator and the content consumer. I mean, that sort of changes the whole nature of the game. It demystifies the process. I hate to, you know, use an IKEA-ism, but it starts to democratize the design of the medium. Also, along with that, I want to remind myself of this because Merrick was so kind as to correct me when I referred to comics as a genre. They are not a genre. They are a format. So you could say, you know, science fiction is a genre. Memoir is a genre. But, you know, the novel or the novelette or the comic, that's all a format. So I just in clarifying that also gave me a really much more, much greater appreciation for sort of what comics do in the course of storytelling and how we should view them. Because I think, I mean, I Merrick was telling me that I'm not the only person to make the mistake of calling comics a genre, because, you know, you think back to that traditional, you know, comic book that you might have grown up with, you know, the Superman and the Batman comics, and when you place that traditional lens onto comics, yeah, you start to think about it as a genre, because it's all approximately the same story of the Uberman and, you know, the Uberman's struggles against, you know, an unfair or unjust world. But now I really appreciate how the definition of comics as format helps, and also that dissolving of the wall between content creator and content consumer helps open up comics to just this amazing new or quasi-new territory of storytelling that wasn't previously expressed in the format. We actually talked about, what is the name of it? Fun Home, I believe. That is a memoir-style story done in the comic format. And it is absolutely that. It is not a superhero story, but it is a story that brings that same level of sort of personal insight, struggle within an odd or indeterminate world. It brings that right to the user and makes it accessible. And maybe I'm just marveling at the accessibility of comics, because, I mean, I personally don't have a lot of time to read, you know, novels. I am a horrifically slow reader with a large workload, so I don't have that bulk of free time to sit and just thumb through, say, the latest Game of Thrones. But comics, I mean, I can pack a graphic novel in my commuting briefcase and read it on the Max, and it helps in terms of the acquisition of the story, because you're taking a story that you don't have to, say, back up three pages and reread to remember where you are, because that visual reinforcement is just this wonderful quick reference mechanism, and that leads to a higher accessibility, which I just am thrilled and I'm thrilled with and marvel at.
Yeah, that's great that you can, you know, public transportation is a great platform to get some reading in. Yeah, that's really great. Did you have any comics that she might have mentioned that you're kind of intrigued about maybe starting or continuing to read?
Well, I have always been a fan of Transmetropolitan, and I believe that's Warren Ellis. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure. Transmetropolitan follows the exploits of a gentleman named Spider Jerusalem. He is essentially the Hunter S. Thompson of the far future. And by the far future, I mean a future world where they have, I believe, flying cars, nanites, micro-projection, holograms, and the Hunter S. Thompson of the future carries, of course, a sidearm. It is referred to as the Bowel Disruptor, and you can only guess what that does in context of the storyline. But to reference what the nature of the plot is, so Spider Jerusalem comes out of sort of his backwoods cabin existence, where he sort of swore off after a healthy career in journalism. He swore off the modern world, but he comes back in due to a very heated political campaign or election cycle that is starting up. So he comes back, you know, much more jaded, much more, you know, self-abusive, but also driven to acquire the truth and make the truth known on a very public level, and, you know, with no regard to the consequences of doing that, because he is set on that one mission, one goal. And the comic is visually stunning. I mean, the level of detail and color is just amazing. In sort of the same tradition as you find in The Fifth Element, it is this opus of high saturation, just beautiful color.
Yeah, it's artist is Derek Robertson, and the writer, you were correct, Warren Ellis.
Cool. So,
by DC Comics, if anybody is interested in checking that out. And I'm sure there are copies at Bridge City Comics that people can pick up.
It's a good one. I remember my friend did that scene where the guy, you know, where he's walking on the cars because it's all jam-packed with traffic. I had a friend who did that, and the person drove away, and it was not...
Real-life reenactment?
It's a great comic, yeah.
Awesome. Cool. And any other mentions, Rob, that you would want our listeners to check out?
Oh, let's see.
Squirrel Girl?
Squirrel Girl. I mean, I'm actually going to pick that up myself after the description and the frequency with which my other friend dresses her child up as Squirrel Girl. I certainly think that's worth diving into. And in general, I think X-Men as a storyline, I almost feel is one of these just continuously relevant stories. And I feel like they do a good job of incorporating sort of new environmental material into their metaphor. So, of course, with the new sort of next 4 years of America, I have a feeling that Marvel will have some pretty interesting interpretations and work.
Some new mutants coming out, would you say?
Right? Yeah. Maybe a new version of the Sentinels. I could certainly see a Dark Future storyline being at the top of the list for potential new stories to come out. Maybe they're going to expand the stories within the Age of Apocalypse. And, perfect. If you haven't delved into the Age of Apocalypse storyline in the X-Men comics, absolutely, it is time to revisit that.
All right. Well, thank you, Rob, for your insight and interview with Merrick Monroe. That was very informative and enlightening and great to bring into a local perspective, too. So if anybody's interested in going to Bridge City Comics, they're located in North Portland. You can also go online, bridgecitycomics.com. Thanks, Rob, for donating your vehicle to KBOO. I know it will be put to good use in one way or another, and hopefully we'll see you in the studio for the next episode of Radio Geekly.
Yes, indeed. And before I go, I actually have two just little events that I wanted to call out.
Yes, please do.
If we have time. So since it's January and, you know, we're all sort of huddled inside, I feel obligated to give us a few options for January. So the first, which is coming up, is January 18th, and this is off to the side of our normal, say, game or comic-related programming, but I wanted to call out the Computer-Human Interaction Forum of Oregon. That's CHIFOO, CHIFOO. So this is a technology meetup group, and it has monthly lectures on a wide range of topics, everything from digital storytelling to the design of Disney roller coasters to security issues that you may or may not be aware of behind the scenes on your computer. They have a really interesting scope of programming. I encourage everyone to check them out. And if you want to go in person, on January 18th in the evening, they'll be at New Relic in downtown Portland featuring a lecture called Innovating from Within. So if you're interested in getting your tech nerd on, check that out. Also, later in the month, on January 28th, we have Nerd Camp Night Out. This is an event brought to you by Sarah Gouldie, a personal favorite of mine. And that'll be starting at Red Castle Games. And I don't know if there's a crawl started that'll be a part of that, but it'll be a really good time with a bunch of, nerds like yourselves, like us all.
And the date for that one?
That's January 28th.
Okay, cool. And we'll put the links onto the KBOO website. So, cool. I've got a couple other events on here, but I'll let you go, Rob, since you've got to do your day job thingy. So, thanks so much for calling, and we'll talk to you next month.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, everyone.
All right. Take care. Yeah, and so as we wrap up here, got a couple more events to talk about that are coming up in the future months. Since I mentioned I am an avid tabletop gamer, GameStorm is another comic, convention. We're talking about comics, and I'm looking at a comic book right now. but it's a gaming convention that's the end of March, March 30th through April 2nd at the Red Lion in Jansen Beach. It's a fun 3-day event where it's tabletop gaming. There's panels. There's just fun times to be had. More information can be found at gamestorm.com. I will also post the link onto our Facebook page. And in February, there's the Wizard World Comic Con. And if you geeks out there remember that KBOO had a booth at the event at the Oregon Convention Center last year, and we were able to walk around and get some interviews with folks and talk to people about KBOO and our community, and maybe we will have a booth again this year. Radio Geekly in particular would love to be there on the floor interviewing all of our fellow geeks and nerds. And according to their website, David, Nichelle Nichols is going to be one of the guests there, which I'm really excited. For those of you who don't know, she was Lieutenant Uhuru. Was that her title? Was she a lieutenant?
Yeah.
Okay. Or the red shirt, one of the red shirts.
Communication officer in Star Trek original series.
Yeah, so she is going to be there. That's also great. Dean Cain, for those of you who know who Dean Cain is, he's done several things, but most notably, I would like to say he was one of the Supermans on television. Not to be compared to other Supermans in movie and television form, but yeah. Any events that you're kind of excited about, David, or looking forward to just in general for 2017?
I should have done my homework, but there are things that I will be going to, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And I know you're doing like book panels and things and that nature, so that would be interesting to get to. And maybe we'll have another Futurama philosophy.
I should probably do a
Futurama philosophy. Because we just had an election, and I'm sure the creators will be loving to have that new content.
If I was on it last, I discovered a Chewbacca sings Silent Night, and I thought that was great. I should have had that for Christmas. So you can still look it up. It's kind of fun.
Oh, man. I saw that there was, this is kind of old, but I saw instead of having a Yule log, you can actually have Vader as your Yule log. And so you can just watch his burning body instead of the Yule log for, you know, the holidays.
One of those constant things on the screen.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. So anyway, thanks everyone for listening to Radio Geekly. Next month, we are going to continue talking about gatekeeping. We're going to dig into another community, the POC community. So if you have any insights or comments that you would like to contribute to that conversation, you can email us at aradiogeekly@kboo.fm. We are also on Facebook, facebook.com/radiogeekly, all one word. And we are on Twitter as well, at Radio Geekly. And I was checking, David, the other day, and we have hundreds of followers on Twitter. It is amazing.
Oh, great.
So thank you all for tuning in, for following us, for tweeting everything. And stay tuned for Moving On, coming on at noon. This is Just Jess. Thank you, David, for joining me in the studio. And we will post all of the references to all the Comic Cons, all of the podcasts and information on current events, things that are coming up, things to look forward to and whatnot on our Facebook page. So thank you all for joining us, and we will see you next time. This is KBOO Portland.
Hi, this is Anita Sarkeesian, and you've been listening to A Radio Geekly.